Welcome back here on 104.5 The Zone. The final hour is upon us on this Monday. I hear it's awful dreary in Nashville, Tennessee. I will make my return later this afternoon. In the meantime, we're broadcasting live from Seattle, about six blocks away from the site where the Tennessee Titans broke the Seattle Seahawks over Fat Randy's knee. We've spent a lot of time talking about it over the course of today's show. We welcome your participation, as always. The number is simple, 615-737-1045. Your thoughts, your questions, your comments, your concerns, your Fat Randy nicknames, we're taking them all throughout the course of today's program and into the final hour before Blaine and Mickey take over at 1 o'clock Central Time. So we ended last hour talking about Derrick Henry and how it feels more and more since last season that things are trending in the direction of a Hall of Fame resume. It's trending in the direction of Derrick Henry being, you know, one of the most prolific backs, not just in football right now, but in the annals of the sport, right? This is something that I had this realization. I think it was the Baltimore game, right? Where they won at Baltimore in overtime with a walk-off, if I remember correctly, was a 26-yard run by Derrick at the end of that game. And I just had one of those moments where I looked at him and I said, this is like, I feel like I've taken this so much for granted. Because in my career, DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry are the only two Titans running backs that I have witnessed, right? I did not watch Eddie George while he was doing Eddie George things. That was long before my time of cognizance and paying attention to football. The Eddie George I know now makes cameos on Ballers and does Broadway plays and shills tequila. And now is the head coach of Tennessee State.
Got his first win.
Did they win?
Yeah, in Nissan Stadium.
Well, congratulations to the Tennessee State Tigers on their home opening victory and Eddie George's first home game at Nissan Stadium as a head coach. Very, very cool. But for my part, you know, the more that I watch Derrick, the more that I think of him as like LeBron James, where I have to like remove myself from the fact that I'm so used to watching LeBron James and Derrick Henry be great on an entirely different level among their peers that I'm not processing just how special it is in real time, right? He's the LeBron James of running backs in that regard, where you want to appreciate him while he's doing these things in front of you rather than being like, yeah, you know, I'm used to seeing Derrick Henry rip off 60-yard touchdown runs because he's been doing that every year that I've been working as an NFL reporter. So from that standpoint, you have to take a step back. Now, on the defensive side of the ball, it's been a different story. On the defensive side of the ball, we've seen them, you know, have a roller coaster of a couple of years, right, where you know, the 2019 season opens and Marcus Mariota can't do anything with the offense and the defense is only allowing 20 points per game because they have to and a necessity. And those long runs would go against them at the end of games because they're physically exhausted. And then Dean Pease unretires and goes to Atlanta this year. And by the way, the Atlanta defense looks horrific. Tom Brady put 5 passing touchdowns on them yesterday. So God help Dean Pease down there and Arthur Smith because it looks pretty ghastly so far.
It made it a game for a moment. It cut it to a 3-point game after being down 28-10, and then Brady did Brady things. And the same one guy had 2 pick sixes on Matt Ryan.
You know he's leading the league in touchdown passes right now, Brady, at 44 years old?
Well, he had 4 on that Thursday night. 5
oh,
no, 4 against the Cowboys.
4 against the Cowboys, 5 against
9 touchdown passes, and 4 of them to Rob Gronkowski.
Which is crazy. They literally just dusted these 2 off and trotted them out, and now they're here to cave everybody's skulls in again. But to speak to the Titans defense, to get back on track to that, they struggled. They struggled not throughout the course of this game as they did against Arizona, but they did give up 3 massive chunk plays that had the ability to decide that game. And so when we spoke to Kevin Byard about this yesterday in the post-game press conference, you know, not just Derrick Henry being a part of halftime, but Kevin Byard spoke on this as well. And what a galvanizing moment the halftime locker room was when the Titans were trailing 24-9.
No, I think, I couldn't get the word out, but Nah, guys were turned up. I just think it was simple fact is we were just really wasn't proud of how we played in that first half. I mean, obviously, we feel like we played pretty good. I mean, just a little, but those big plays, you know, we gave up three plays. If you look at those three plays that we don't give up, it's a totally different ball game. So that's the type of thing. Like, we was obviously animated, but at the same time, it was like, okay, let's just calm down. Let's go out here and play football, play the football the way we know how to play it. And I think we was able to calm down, kind of settle down, and, you know, allow the game to come to us.
You know what allowed that? That was Kevin Byard at the postgame press conference last night. You know what allowed them to settle down? The presence of one person. And it wasn't just the presence of one person, but it allowed the defense to play up to the level that this one particular individual found. It's not on the offensive side of the ball, it's on the defense. I'm going to tell you who that individual is coming up next, because he's the new Titans CB, not wide receiver one, not QB one, but CB one, cornerback one for the Tennessee Titans. Through two games, he has emerged. And I don't think people expected it to go this way. You'll hear from him coming up next. I'm Buck Rising, live from Seattle. This is 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back. Buck Rising here with you live from Seattle. We should probably thank people for being our friends for how dumb this show has been over the course of today, but it's been a lot of fun. And it's not just over yet. Now, we have put out, so what does APB stand for, Lucas? Because I saw you put that in the comments on YouTube.
I was just thinking about that. I don't know.
You don't know what it means?
No, it's just a thing people say.
Are you sure?
let me research that.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Because we have put out a notice. Darrington, our heel of the Buck Rising show, the man who compares Ryan Tannehill to Matt Schaub and is a noted Seahawks fan, has yet to make an appearance today. Now, have you discovered the meaning of APB?
Yes, it stands for All Points Bulletin. So it's a general bulletin broadcast to alert law enforcement officers over a wide area that someone like a suspect or something like a stolen vehicle is being actively sought in connection with a crime. All Points Bulletin for Darrington today.
In connection with a crime. The crime of comparing Ryan Tannehill to Matt Schaub. I believe he has been located. Because I have a tweet from somebody that's just at D Lee on social media. And all it says to me is, in all caps, 1 p.m. today at Buck Rising. Which ignores, of course, the fact that the show concludes at about 12:55. And that Blaine and Mickey, who will not go after Darrington the way that all of our callers and Lucas and myself will go after Darrington, it ignores the fact that none of the smoke that awaits him between the hours of 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. will be there.
It's not even about going after him. It's just about accountability, right? He came on here. He was talking his stuff. He's a big Seahawks guy, Matt Schaubing, no. Ryan Tannehill. It's just about accountability. That's all.
Yes. So there appears to be great cowardice on the part of Darrington. An All Points Bulletin, as it's known, has been put out. And so we will see if this coward who compares Ryan Tannehill to Matt Schaub and is a noted Seahawks fan decides to make an appearance today. Of course, we say with all love and respect, because we need Darrington. We want Darrington on that wall. We need him on that wall as the heel of our radio show. 615-737-1045 is how you can get involved. We're going to talk about the officiating and Julio Jones's touchdown that was not a touchdown, according to the officials, and the, you know, just across the board poor officiating that took place. But I want to start with what we talked about before we ended the last segment. I told you that the Titans have discovered their cornerback one. The cornerback one for the Tennessee Titans after two games and should be moving forward is none other than Christian Fulton. Christian Fulton, who Mike Vrabel has told us many times over that he's just frankly excited to watch Christian Fulton play. Christian Fulton, and I'll say this about the 2020 draft class, because they've been under a lot of heat, understandably so. They've been under a ton of heat as a unit because Isaiah Wilson, of course, going the way that things went. Darrington Evans, speaking of Darringtons that are missing and need an all-points bulletin put out for them, Darrington Evans, the third-round running back, is perpetually on IR, it seems, and has been recently placed or was at the start of the regular season placed on IR. Now you've gotten contributions from Chris Jackson, Laurel Murchison. But Christian Fulton has been the biggest and the brightest of those contributors. Elijah Molden really is the only contributor for the 2021 class, for those of you who are ignoring the fact that, or are forgetting the fact that Caleb Farley was ruled out and didn't even travel to this game in Seattle. But Christian Fulton's primary assignment yesterday was DK Metcalf, who is regarded, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, regarded as two of the best, if not the best, wide receiver tandem in football. And it would be hard for me to dispute that, even as A.J. Brown and Julio Jones are not to be trifled with. And A.J. Brown did not have a good performance yesterday, but it doesn't mean that he's not still a fantastic young player in this league. Christian Fulton's numbers versus DK Metcalf yesterday. He was targeted five times. He allowed one completion for 8 yards and no touchdowns. Russell Wilson was not throwing at Christian Fulton yesterday. He was not targeting DK Metcalf because every time he tried, it was an incompletion outside of the one completion for 8 yards. This was Christian Fulton speaking on his confidence and his comfort level through these two games, now that he's had this full offseason to kind of get his feet under him.
Yeah, I say both being confident and just being comfortable. You know, I feel like the game slowed down for me a lot this year, you know, so and just the vets, you know, helping me, you know, the coaches helping me, you know, in the film room, just trying to, you know, make plays, you know, and just trying to make sure I build up on my games, you know, throughout the week in practice, you know, just want to make sure, you know, the guys give me a good look so I'll be ready on Sundays.
So, and I'd like to play the follow-up because that was my voice that you hear muffled in the background, because I asked him about the confidence that his coaching staff has him, because Mike Vrabel has gone on and on whenever we talk about Christian Fulton about how excited he is to watch Christian Fulton play football. And this is what Christian Fulton had to say about having the trust of his coaching staff.
It's definitely big, you know, it's great when, you know, your coaches believe in you, they give you an extra boost of confidence. So it's great to, you know, to know that the coaches believe in me and, you know, I just don't want to let them down, you know, whatever the task may be for me that week.
Yeah. I mean, and he hasn't, right? He has been a shining beacon in the Titans secondary that desperately needs said beacon. He needs he needs to be their best corner and has been through these two games. Now, there will be moments where he, you know, he has a bit of a letdown. It's the NFL. Everybody gets got every once in a while. And certainly that was the case for Elijah Molden. Elijah Molden got a couple of times yesterday. Tyler Lockett, I'm Bradley McDougal. Oh my God. Oh my God, Lucas. We talked about that conversation all week long because we had him on the radio show, former Seahawk. I'm like, oh, you know, maybe he'll give them some kind of competitive advantage playing his former teammate and having played against Russell Wilson with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bradley McDougal looked like hell yesterday. That was a tough scene. That was a real tough scene. So there was no Bradley McDougal revenge game to be found on the field as Tyler Lockett was running free in their secondary for 63 yards, and Fred Swain was going for 68 yards on third and 12. And the safety, Amani Hooker, is a difficult loss and will be out for several more weeks given that they had to place him on the short-term IR. So cornerback one is now Christian Fulton, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as they're concerned as well, because given the matchup that he was assigned after things did not go well for Jackrabbit Jenkins against DeAndre Hopkins. Jackrabbit had a couple of good plays yesterday, but I think Fulton is showing you that he is a long-term solution in that secondary. And he spoke yesterday about just basically trying to put his best foot forward. And this is what the second-year corner had to say.
You know, it was, I think I played, you know, pretty solid. You know, it was fun going against, you know, some of the top guys in the league and just getting that opportunity, you know, each week, you know, the coaches believe in me, you know, to face those guys, you know, and I just want, you know, put my best foot forward and, you know, just try to make as many plays to help the team win.
And he did that. He did that. He helped. While Tyler Lockett got his numbers, DK Metcalf did not. And that speaks to a great effort by Christian Fulton as the rest of the secondary and the rest of the defense tried to rally around him.
So given the comfortability that people have now with Fulton on that side, do you think they need to see more from Jackrabbit? Like, how would you gauge his performance through two games?
Meh. Yeah. Like, I think it's all right. Like, I think he's, you know, Caleb Farley obviously can't go either due to readiness or due to health in this particular case. He was flat out ruled out with a shoulder injury. And I'm trying to figure out, I still haven't been able to figure out the play where that happened against Arizona, because all he was playing was field goal block against Arizona. And then he got mop up duty when they put all the backups in as the game turned into a blowout. But, you know, what's the other option? You can't put Molden on the outside. Molden got the business yesterday, and Molden is most comfortable in the slot, even if yesterday did not look very comfortable for the rookie third round pick out of Washington. Chris Jackson, you know, had a bad penalty. It looked on that Fred Swain blown coverage that Chris Jackson might have let him loose, because there was just nobody around him. So somebody, McDougald was closest to him, but I just kind of watching that play back a couple of times, it looked like Chris Jackson had some kind of involvement. Point being that Jackrabbit and Fulton are still your best options on the outside. You know, and my expectation for Jackrabbit Jenkins coming into this year is he's just Malcolm Butler. That's just how you have to look at him. And Malcolm had some great plays, some great efforts, some great energy, but was at the back end of his career. And Jackrabbit is that, likes to gamble a little more than Malcolm Butler did. So far, it has not worked in the Titans' favor entirely, but I think he's held up fine. I think fine, because DeAndre Hopkins is going to do that to a lot of people. They're a lot better than Jackrabbit. So I'm not necessarily burying him because of the way that it looked in week one. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved in the conversation. Tony is on the line and wants to talk about yesterday's game. What's up, Tony?
Hey, good afternoon, Buck. How are you doing, brother?
I'm great, buddy.
Hey, man. So I just wanted to kind of break down kind of what I thought about yesterday's performance and kind of get your take on it. So initially, I had picked the Seahawks to win that game by about 17 points. I didn't think the Titans had a chance, but the first half of that game kind of seemed to go the way that I thought it would. I think Derek had 6 carries for 9 yards early. The line wasn't blocking very well. Obviously I was really nervous with Taylor being out, but I wasn't as nervous with Taylor being out because I saw his performance last week. Bright spots in the offense for me yesterday, Buck, was definitely Ryan Tannehill. I thought he played really, really well. There was a couple of balls that he left out in front or behind the receivers, but overall I think his quarterback play was really, really good. I can't necessarily call the fumble on him, although he did get hit from the backside to his kind of blind to that, but I'm calling these fumbles in the first couple weeks from Ryan on that offensive line. So my down point to this, Buck, is I think the offensive line play needs to be a lot better. I think that we need to block better. I think our front four on defense showed signs of being much better than they were last year. Kind of opposite, the secondary looked a little bit rough yesterday. I would say this overall, Buck, in my opinion, as bad as the Titans played yesterday, they beat a Super Bowl contender on the road and what could be one of, if not Kansas City, the most hostile environment to play in the NFL. And I also think that we might have found a kicker for another week or two. So to see another kicker come out as number 10 since 2019, Buck, and miss a field goal but still come back to hit the overtime game winner, that was fantastic. And I got one more thing for you, Buck. When Julio Jones toe taps in the end zone for a touchdown, what is the difference between that and what happened yesterday? Hey, man, I love your show. Love you, Lucas. See y'all soon.
Hey, thanks for the call, Tony. There's a lot there to break down. 615-737-1045 is the number. So Derrick Henry's stats at the half, he was after. Lucas, can you guess how much I like that we're playing stat trivia throughout the course of today. Can you tell me what Derrick Henry was averaging at halftime against the Seahawks as they trailed 24-9?
Less than three yards per carry.
2.7 yards That's per right. carry. He finished with 5.2. It was 13 attempts, 35 yards. The Titans were 0 of 7. 0 of 7 on third down, which was a nightmare with the way that it started, and the turnovers had started by then as well with the sacks that Bobby Wagner had. That was the one where he just came free and popped Ryan Tannehill square in the jaw. There was not a forced fumble yet. That came in the second half in not an ideal situation that set up that Chris Carson 1-yard touchdown run. But let's kind of because there's a lot there, Tony, and I'm not going to be able to get to all of it, but I want to talk about Julio Jones and the officiating, because that was a big point of contention yesterday. So Julio Jones gets a touchdown taken away from him. It was very DeAndre Hopkins week one-esque, where it's a back of the end zone throw. You see Julio has the recognition. It's crazy how these guys operate and how they're able to process in real time. But Julio says, you know what? Hell with it. Why don't I just let Julio Jones tell you about the cat? Actually, let's start here, Lucas. Let's start with Mike Vrabel talking about the official's call on the field, and then we'll hear from Julio Jones momentarily about the touchdown that wasn't yesterday against the Seahawks.
Well, we got some new guys. You know, I mean, I think so. First of all, I think it was when you go toe heel, that's out of bounds. So apparently they thought that the heel came down on the line. And when you drag your toe, and that's the end of it. But when you go toe heel, you know, they count the heel. So I guess that they thought that there was something in between, or, you know, you might want to call the league. They got a new guy. They got new people up there working. You know, Al's not being up there anymore. So some of those, they stayed with the ruling on the field last year. Now there's a new group of guys, and that's what they saw. I'm not going to, you know, sit there and say anything other than I'm sure it was really close.
That was Mike Vrabel being exceedingly diplomatic yesterday. Now, I was keeping tabs of our friend Mina Kimes. I did a couple wellness checks on her throughout the course of the day on social media. All she did was respond to me with a hiss after they doinked the extra point, because she knew what was coming just as well as everybody else who's watched the Seahawks in the Pete Carroll era saw coming. So what Mike Vrabel is saying there is they considered Julio Jones's heel to be out of bounds because his toe touched first, then the heel comes down after he gets the second foot down. And the heel, in the opinion of the officials, comes down on the white line, making it out of bounds. Except when you look at all of the pictures that were taken, Donald Page, the Tennessee Titans team photographer, Donald does great work. And he got just a tremendous shot of that touchdown that wasn't. And it looks, I mean, if there is a portion of Julio Jones' blue cleats touching that white line, I could not discern it because it is... It looked clear to me that he was in bounds based on toe heel rule, right? Heel was in bounds based on the photographic evidence, but according to the referees, according to the officials, that was not the case. Now, we asked Julio Jones about this as well, and Julio followed the lead of his head coach in being exceedingly diplomatic.
No, I don't. I mean, I control what I can control, right? So, whatever they ruled it, they said it was wasn't a touchdown. So my mindset and mentality is just get the next play. We just got to go out there and play ball. Oh, yeah, the guys I just saw it. But I felt like I was in once I caught the ball, because I looked down, caught the ball, secured the catch, one foot down, second foot down, and I felt like I scored, you know. But, I mean, that's not my place. To do their job. That's their job. They're professionals at what they do. You know, and they try to make every call the best judgment they can do. Like I said, it's not my job to go out there and officiate the game.
I mean, he handled that as well as one could for being robbed. I think that the red zone gods apparently hate Julio Jones. He's had trouble, like, score, not, I don't think due to any fault of his own, but whether it's due to officiating blunders or being a decoy for Calvin Ridley for a couple of years, last couple of years in Atlanta, Julio Jones hasn't been able to get, like, touchdowns. He stuffs the box score outside of being able to score. And so I thought the officiating errors were on both sides yesterday. I thought, you know, it started with the Julio Jones. I believe the Julio Jones non-touchdown was first. And if I recall the sequence of events correctly, it was the Chris Carson spot that they gave him a first down when he was very, very clearly short of the first down, that Mike Vrabel, just based on our vantage point in the press box, he had his hand on the challenge flag. But anytime it comes down to the challenging of a spot, Vrabel always cites the statistics on how infrequently, almost never, do they overturn the spot of the ball. So I guess he did that against his, he did that in real time according to his better judgment. And it ended up being okay. But, you know, for the officials, also that taunting flag on, I think the corner's name is DJ Reed for Seattle on in his coverage when he was clearly beat by AJ Brown and just kind of, you know, he'd gotten beat. I don't know what he was flexing about in the first place because there was nothing for him to be flexing about. Ryan Tannehill just simply overthrew AJ Brown, but the taunting flag on DJ Reed was trash. And I understand that Titans fans don't care about that because it went against the Seahawks, but as somebody who's objectively viewing the game and is a fan of NFL football as a reporter, I thought that was such a crap call.
But that's going to happen this season. There's going to be more of that with the new rule.
Well, and then of course there's the play that should have ended the game. And in fact, I think we have Mike Keith's call of that yesterday afternoon on Titans radio with the Ola Adeniyi sack that should have been a safety and should have ended the game in favor of the Titans in overtime.
Wilson under pressure, flushed out, being chased in the end zone. Adeniyi grabs him in the end zone.
Safety.
If it's a safety, it's over. They'll call his forward progress down at the one.
Now, that also a trash call. I mean, that was a safety. Clear and obvious. It was clear and obvious to Coach Mack, clear and obvious to Mike Keith, clear and obvious to every one of us sitting in the press box watching that game from 1,000 feet above in Lumen Field. I mean, it was such a trash call. And a lot of them went in favor of the Seahawks yesterday, but there were some that also went in favor of the Titans. That frankly, it was just a poorly officiated football game. 615-737-1045 is the number. Let's go to Joseph in Nashville, who wants to talk about the safety no call. What's up, Joseph?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that it was a safety and intentional grounding at the same time because there was no receiver in vicinity when he let go the ball when he fell inside the end zone. I mean, I thought it was like a double safety, if you could call it that.
Oh, but you're correct. It should have been a safety and it should have been an intentional grounding. And the officials called it neither in overtime at a point that was critical to ending the game. I think you're spot on about that. Let's go to Jaden in Laverne, who wants to talk about our boy, because he's still missing. Darrington is, you know, the show is, there are less than 20 minutes to go in this radio program. And we have still not heard from noted Heel and Seahawks fan Darrington of the Buck Rising Show. What's up, Jaden?
Yeah, I'd like to say that the guy that you thought you found on Twitter earlier was actually my dad, Donald Lee. So Darrington's still in the loose. Don't let him off the hook. He needs to call in.
Still
wait,
out there.
Wait. Stay there, Jade. I accidentally thought your dad was Darrington because I think I just put your dad on blast. I hope his mentions are not poison.
He texted me and he was like, "What did Buck just say about me?" Because he wasn't listening.
Oh. Oh, God. please send your apologies to your father for me. 615-737-1045. See, this is, you can't be reckless on the social media, man, because you guys are vicious out there. And I'm sure you swarmed Jaden's poor father because I mistakenly thought his Twitter account was Darren.
He's still on the loose.
Still on the loose. Still hiding in the shadows of Lumen Field where the Seahawks fell yesterday. All right. We come back. Well, actually, should we squeeze Joseph in Nashville in really quick? Let's do that before we head to the polls. Excuse me, Matt is in Nashville and wants to talk about the officiating. What's up, Matt?
Yeah, so I was going to ask about the safety, but there was another play. I think it was in the fourth quarter. The Seahawks had the ball. It was like third down. I think it was Chris Carson.
Yeah,
he was running towards the side of where the camera was, and he like reached out real slow.
Yeah, I don't want to interrupt you, Matt, but that was the spot that we were talking about, the missed spot where they gave him the first down, and Mike Vrabel didn't challenge. So that's the play that we addressed earlier in the show. It's just a miss. Mike Vrabel could have challenged
it. I think it was the worst call of the night on the field.
I don't know. The safety was tough because it wasn't just
as far as how obvious it was of how far he was from the marker. I thought that was the most egregious of the three.
I can see why you would feel that way, but given again the implications, they kind of outweigh because who was it earlier? That was it Joseph that said the double safety? Because not only was it a safety, right, it would have been an intentional grounding and would have backed it up further and made it another safety. So they missed the opportunity to call the safety twice because the game was done so poorly yesterday. So credit to Mike Vrabel and Julio Jones for handling that hell of a lot better than I would have. But, you know, they have massive fines on the horizon if they go with the refs. All right, we'll wrap the show up. Coming up next, polls on the other side. Buck Rising live from Seattle on 104.5 The Zone. Final segment of the day, live from Seattle. Welcome back in. Buck Rising here with you for about, what, 9 more minutes, 8 more minutes? Going to do some polls here in just a second. Going to fly back home to Nashville. I hope the weather improves because it's so pretty here in Seattle. I've had so much fun. This has probably been my favorite road trip that I've made in the last 5 years, and I've seen a bunch of cool places while covering the Tennessee Titans, and it's been a lot of fun to do this show today. You guys have been exceptional, and thank you so much for interacting with us the way that you do. Before we wrap up, I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do, Lucas, because my flight isn't until 5:30 Pacific time, which means 7:30 Central time tonight. So, and my hotel checkout was 45 minutes ago. So I don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
Be a black duffel bag over your head, and you're just gonna be dragged away here mid segment. I'll finish.
I mean, probably. Listen, I think. Yeah, okay. It's like that. It's like that. That screenshot from Friday's show where you're just staring up longingly at my chair.
Yeah, I've made a call. They know. They know you're late.
All right, you jerk. Let's do the polls.
Stop the count. Stop the count. The polls have closed, and the votes have been tallied. It's the segment where bias takes over and nuance goes to die. Now, here's your favorite Buck Rising Show daily correspondent, Lucas Polzica.
Titans legend Fat Randy, yes or no? 74% say yes.
Yeah, Fat Randy forever. Fat Randy until the end of time. Fat Randy from 36 yards for the win in OT to give the Titans their first victory on the season. I want to be respectful. I do not want to body shame, but I think Fat Randy's a great nickname. So we're going to ride with Fat Randy until further notice.
He has had a great career in the NFL, really.
A great career?
I mean, a very good career. Like longevity. I think that's fair to say.
Longevity is good. That is, he has played in more NFL games than you or I. That is correct.
What was the turning point for the Titans on Sunday? Scott says, our kicker making field goals instead of coming up empty, and Derrick Henry. Jay Miller says the taunting penalty changed the momentum of the game.
You know, that did have a bit of a vibe because that was a high leverage situation. To be honest with you, to put the Titans in, to give the Titans better field position and to keep the offense moving when it could have very easily stalled out. But for me, I think it was the Seattle after the 68-yard touchdown, the missed extra point, because that opened the door for the possibility of overtime.
Crazy Pellet says Michael Pruitt lighting the fire under the Titans offense. He really did bring a spark.
No, it's not just stirring Jamal Adams up into getting penalties on the Seahawks, but he made plays down the field in the passing game. Listen, I think Ferkser, this whole conversation about the Titans tight end, I won't go long on it, but I don't think it's a tight end one situation. I think it's whomever favors them the most throughout the course of the week and based on the opponent. So I think that it can be it. I mean, Jeff Swaim can't be dropping passes in the end zones like he did against Arizona. But there will be times when you see all, I guess, four of these guys, including Tommy Hudson, who was called up yesterday from the practice squad. I think you'll see these guys have not an even workload, but a more even workload than you might have expected.
Yeah, Hudson had a big first down catch on Sunday. Sunday was probably a good example of what it'll look like when those guys are able to open up more with AJ and Julio on the field together.
Yes, one would hope.
DK Titan says the 60-yard run was the turning point.
Yeah, people are being, you know, people have favorites and they're going with recency bias. But I would say that the touchdown, it matters, but it doesn't matter the way that you needed it to matter without the missed extra point.
What Titans injury are you most concerned with? Lawan, Amani Hooker, or Jayon Brown? Almost 1,000 votes here. 39% say it's Lawan. 38% say Hooker. 23% say Brown.
Yeah, I stole this question from Austin Stanley and Zach Bingham on the A to Z Sports Morning Show. By the way, A to Z Sports Primetime, I'm going to do it from Seattle at 4:30 Central Time, given that I'll be in the air at its normal, regularly scheduled time at 8 p.m. Central. So you can hang out with me on the A to Z Sports Network. I'll probably do it from a park bench somewhere in Seattle at one of these. What was the movement a couple of years ago? I think I was in college where it was like not defund Wall Street, but something Wall Street, you know what I'm talking about, where people would like protest in the squares and there was like tent camps and stuff like that.
Not really.
I can't remember what it was. Keep it moving.
Well, you know what we should have done with this poll is put Roger Saffold in there, because Sombrelo and Quisenberry, they covered well for Lawan at the tackle spots, but Aaron Brewer got beat up a couple of times, and they clearly still do not trust Dylan Radins in there at guard.
Yeah, that first play where Saffold came out, because Saffold came back in and then had to leave again with a shoulder injury was the designation. But that first play that Aaron Brewer came in was the strip sack of Tannehill. It's not run left is not going the way that everybody thought it was going to go this year.
Did Hendon Hooker do enough against Tech to start for the Vols against Florida on Saturday? 72% say yes, but we'll get into that more tomorrow. Mike Wilson joined us at 12:20. What was the most egregious officiating error in Titans versus Seahawks on Sunday? All right, 51%, well over 1,000 votes. People were obviously fired up about these. 51% say it was the Julio non-touchdown. 31% say it was the non-safety on Wilson. 13% say the Chris Carson spot. 5% the DJ Reed taunting.
Yeah, Lucas said the most egregious of them was the Chris Carson spot.
I just thought it was the most obvious.
Yes, you are correct in saying it's the most obvious, but the missed double safety opportunity was the most impactful.
Last one, did Derrick Henry boop Quandre Diggs yesterday? 95% say yes.
Yes. Yes is the answer. Derrick Henry booped another grown man who got booped because he was trying to avoid being the next Josh Norman. What do you got, Lucas?
Career high today. Spencer has given us an 8.5.
Ooh, that's the grade for the show. And that's the show live from Seattle. When next we speak, it'll be at 4:30 Central Time on A to Z Sports primetime. And then I'm back home in Nashville to do this all over again tomorrow. Spend a little more time on the Tennessee Volunteers. Loaded show. Looking forward to it then. Blaine and Mickey, though, they're next.